This is Jennifer Hunt with Barbara Sparks on the 7th of July 2015 at her home in Somerset. Barbara, would you just like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Barbara Sparks, as you said.
And when did you join WRVS?
Well, I joined in 1978. Do you want to know why I joined?
Yes, please.
I was totally fed up with nappies and baby talk. And I've got three children, and we decided that I wouldn't go to work. I would stay home with the children while the children were small. But there's only so much nappies that you actually want to cope with. And one night I went along to a talk, which was about emergency services, basically. And I thought, well, I quite like the sound of this. So the lady said to me, would I like to join an emergency team? Yes, I would. So we formed one in the village. And I got heavily involved with that. And then I started to work in the clothing store. You didn't always become members originally. You were helpers. And they decided that perhaps I should become a member, but I needed to do these 40 duties to become a member. So they signed me up for the clothing store. So Victoria, the one you saw earlier on, she went to playgroup for three mornings a week. And I went into the clothing store in Taunton and thoroughly enjoyed it, absolutely thoroughly enjoyed it.
Who would come into the clothing store?
They were sent by social services. They had to have a need and they would be supplied with up to three changes of clothing twice a year. So they could come in the summer for summer clothes and then in the winter for their winter stuff. And everything was logged down in a book. And if they came back in between time and tried to swing the lead that they needed more because they hadn't got any, the ladies would go and produce the book and say, look, is that your signature? Because on the such and such a date, you were given this, 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 this and this. What have you done with it? Well, it wore out. And that was fair enough, that was fair comment. But if it was just that they'd sold it because they thought they'd get a couple of pennies for it, well, no, they didn't get anything else. The ladies were quite strict like that. But you needed to be. And it was quite sad to see some of the people that came in some days, because one lady came in, no names obviously, but she'd been pregnant and she'd got a maternity grant and she'd blown the lot on a pink baby dress because it was something she'd never had when she was a child, and she just loved this dress and she blew the entire maternity grant, and then she had a red-headed boy. And poor lady, she came in and she said, what am I going to do? And they said, don't worry, we'll sort you out. And they gave her a complete layette, so she had everything from nappies right the way through to vests and booties and little rompers, everything that the baby needed for a little boy. And it was so tragic to think that she'd been so much in need when she was a child that all she wanted was this dress for her child. Really, really sad. And used to go in there on a regular basis, well, three times a week, until things changed.
And where was the clothing store?
It was in Taunton. The county office was in Cannon Street, and you accessed it from Cannon Street. But if you went right the way through there, you came to a porter cabin at the back. And that's, the entire porter cabin was the clothing store. And its main access was through a back street, which all the people who got the clothing knew how to get there, and they would come through with their letters from social services. Yeah. But some people, you thought, well, why did you do it? One of my relatives was quite high up in social services elsewhere, and he said he loved WRVS, actually loved WRVS clothing stores, because their staff were being asked for money. And they knew it wasn't being spent on what it was being asked for, whereas they could give them a letter for our clothing store and we would make sure that they actually got what they're supposed to need and that they could use it that way. He couldn't sing the praises high enough. It was great.
And where did the clothes come from?
They were all donations. You put on weight, so you sent your small clothes in. You lost weight, you sent your big clothes in. Your children grew out of them, so you sent the children's clothes in. Every item was gone through and it was checked to make sure that there was at least 6 months wearing it. It wasn't even kept if there wasn't 6 months wearing it. And then they were checked for cleanliness, and We didn't dry clean them, but frequently people took them home and washed and pressed them. And there was never a smell in the clothing store in Taunton. There was not even the hint of a smell of old clothing, because anything that was unpleasant was got rid of very quickly, and some things were unpleasant that were brought in, but they were disposed of immediately. And the things were folded up and they were segregated into men's, women's, boys, girls and babies. And they were kept on shelves, and there was a different person in charge of each section. It was an entire porter cabin, so you know the size of a porter cabin. You can imagine it was quite a big place. And they were run off their feet the 3 mornings that they were open, completely run off their feet. So it was a much needed facility at the time.
Yeah. And after you'd done your 40 duties, did you stay with the clothing store or did you...
Well, I stayed with the clothing store for a while, but then they asked me if I would take more of a role in emergency services. So, yes, certainly I liked emergency services, but would I become the deputy county emergency services organiser? Yeah, loved it. Absolutely loved it. So I got heavily involved with that. And then, because I was doing so much with that, I had to back out of the clothing store things. But, yeah.
Before you joined WRVS, what did you know about the organisation?
Absolutely nothing. I'd never heard of them. So it was quite interesting that this lady came along. She was called Pat Bridger, lovely lady. She came along and gave this talk, and that was it. I was absolutely fired with interest. But we were expected to wear uniform every time we went on a WRVS event. Can't even call it an event when you're turning up at a clothing store, can you? But we were expected to wear uniform. And they looked at me and they could see my age. And they looked me up and down a few times and then found out I'd got 3 children. And the next thing was they produced... I could have bought a uniform, because that's what you had to do. You had to buy your own uniform. But these dear ladies produced a uniform for me because they didn't want me to feel like I couldn't carry on because I didn't have a uniform. Mm. So when it got to be that I was actually signing up to be a member, they produced this second-hand uniform. Mm. How kind of them. And we were expected to wear it all the time then.
And what did the uniform that you first had look like?
It was a short sleeve dress. It was plain green, but with short sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a cardigan that could go with it. Yeah.
And what, apart from the clothing, or as well as the clothing store, what are your earliest memories of volunteering with WRVS?
Oh, let me think. There was an exercise. I should think that actually the first real thing that I did for WRVS was an exercise. And it was, they called it the Nuclear Stew. And it was at Norton Manor, in part of the old camp. And we were to cook this stew. The government were quite keen to work out whether the nation could survive on what they thought would be available in the aftermath of a nuclear war. And they decided, I don't know who it was, but they decided that what it would be beef, because the cows could have been brought in, and kibbled barley. Now, I'd never heard of kibbled barley. I don't know whether you have. But apparently it's rolled in a certain way, and this is what it was supposed to be. We weren't supplying any of the ingredients. They would all be supplied for us. But we had a little chat, and we didn't like the sound of this meat. We weren't going to be allowed to put any seasoning in, so no herbs, no stock cubes, no salt, no pepper. And it sounded disgusting to most of the women who cooked on a regular basis for their family. So we decided that what we would do, we would provide a really wholesome pudding. And we had a red handbook, and in it was the WRVS boiled pudding. So we made up this pudding. And the pudding was enough pudding for everybody. It was cooked in one side of the site. And the other, we had this stew, which was cooked in soya boilers. Don't know if you've ever come across soya boilers, but they're like great big dustbins.
Yeah, we've got one in the archive.
Oh, great. So heavy. Well, it holds 10 gallons of liquid. And in actual fact, it would bring 10 gallons of water to the boil quicker than an electric or a gas one would bring 2.5 gallons of water to the boil. You've got to stoke it properly, obviously, because you fueled it with either coal or wood and just kept stoking it regularly. But we were given these things and we had to make this stew. So there were the things. I can remember standing. Actually, there's a photograph of me kicking around somewhere, of me stirring this great big soya boil with a wooden, it looked like an oar, wooden paddle thing, stirring all around. But whoever supplied us with the ingredients, and it wasn't WRVS, made a great mistake. Instead of getting kibbled barley, which is what they should have got, they got barley meal. And it sank to the bottom of these soya boilers and it turned into porridge. So we had to oik it all out and sieve every bit so that we could water it down and make it more usable. Mm. We did eventually manage, and they did get their meal at about the right time, but oh my goodness me, what a palaver. And can you imagine what that stew tasted like? It was disgusting because there was no seasoning in it. And they had to eat some of it before they were allowed to put any salt on it. So after a while, and you could see their faces screwing up, they came back for the salt and the pepper, and then they were allowed to have it. And I don't think anybody cleared their bowl. The bowls were blue bowls, and they were half a pint. And that was considered to be the starvation diet for anybody. And that's what was needed to keep somebody alive for 24 hours until the next day. So that would be, if they had got anything of their own, hey, but this is what they were going to get as a midday meal, was this blue bowl of stuff. And after they'd had that, they could have their pudding. And we'd made custard as well, but we cheated on the custard. The part of the camp where we were had got a little gas supply, electric supply, and we plugged in little cookers. And we'd made custard in there. We did everything else outside on the in the boilers, but not the custard. We made that indoors. And the puddings went down very well indeed, and every bit of pudding went. That was our nuclear stew.
And there was that part of the training that you received to be in the emergency services team?
We'd had our training. Sorry, I didn't cover the training. We'd had to do our basic training, which was 10 sessions of 2 hours a time. And they went round people's houses doing it. I know one session we had in here. Mm. And the whole team got together and they had the training. And qualified instructors came along and did the training. And it covered many, many topics. Cooking, outdoor cooking was one of them. And the care and uses of soya boilers was included in it. So that was the training came first, then came the exercise.
So there's a lot of practical training
at
that time.
Yes, yeah, very much so. Yeah, working on the theory that you needed to know how to do it, and then you needed to have tried it to make sure that you knew how to do it.
And did you do any other exercises?
Many.
Do you want?
Yeah, my little grip sheet has got a list of just some that I thought of as I was going along. When it was Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother's birthday, it was her 80th birthday, we decided that we were asked, every county was asked to do something special for the Queen Mother's birthday. And in Somerset, we decided that what we'd do would be some children's holiday activities. Mm. And we decided to do little barbecues for them. So we built trench cookers and we cooked sausages and chicken legs and things like that, and all the children's holiday children came along with their hostesses, and they had a whale of a time at the party. Yeah, so yes, those sort of things. Oh, I put other things in here then.
Did you get involved with sort of the Taunton and Wellington Carnival?
Yes, we did. Like that. Sorry, you've got that down on your list.
I went through our narrative reports and listed different things that went on. I've got St Mary's Hospital Fete.
Yeah. St Mary's Hospice Fete.
Yes.
Yeah.
RSPCA Open Day.
Yeah, we did those.
Five districts carol services.
Yes, we did those every Christmas. One in each district. We went round with them.
And were they for WRVS?
They were WRVS members organising them, but it was the Old People's Clubs. Mm-hmm. And the Old People's Clubs would arrive in buses. Sounds like an awful term these days, doesn't it? Old people's clubs, but that's what they were called then.
Sort of the Evergreen and the Derby and
Jones. Yes, those are the ones. They turned up in their buses. There was one in each district, so it was the clubs from that district came. They didn't go all around the county. And so you got different people there every time, but the county staff went to most of them that they possibly could. And it was nice. I mean, one year we were at the Salvation Army Church, and partway through the first hymn, the first carol, the minister stopped us all. And he said, "This is no good." He said, "I've got a room full of people here, and I can barely hear you. You've got to sing out. You're not loud enough." So one person said, "Oh, well, the reason that you're not loud enough is you're playing the notes too high. You need to go down an octave and we might manage it." And the minister looked and much as said, "Well, nobody's ever said that before." So he said to the pianist, "Can you bring it down?" And, "Yeah." So they brought it down an octave and everybody joined in, and that was great. Yeah. So, yeah, we did that. And then there was a big tea afterwards. Yeah. And when it was it must have been the Golden Jubilee of WRVS.
Oh, so 88.
We had a big function in Wells Cathedral. That was for members. And we had four marquee and on the bishop's lawn. And four districts, the five districts in Somerset, but four of the districts had a marquee each, and they had to do the food for everybody else, and everybody had a ticket, and you went into the right booth, into the right tent. And the other district organised the carol service and the stewarding and everything else, and they cleared up. It was Mendip did all the clearing up because Wells Cathedral was in their area. So, yeah, we did things like that. The hospice fete, we went along and helped at the hospice. They were all events where WRVS was getting their face to the fore because we all wore tabards if we didn't wear uniforms to them. And you'd have a little notice, a little board, A board there with the name of WRVS to the fore. And frequently we also had panels up there saying what vacancies we had and would like to help. And then there was the Bath and West, the Royal Bath and West, the show.
Yeah.
We went along, we used to do the creches, loads and loads of creche facilities. And it used to take us all the Tuesday to set up a Bath and West show. And then the children would arrive on the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And it used to take us most of Sunday to clear up afterwards. And to start off with, we didn't have posh toys. We borrowed them from local nurseries. Mm. So we had theirs, and it was very kind of them, and we would give them a little donation for letting us use them. But then little tykes came on board, and they would arrive with a lorry full of beautiful little tykes. I'm very, very set on little toy stores. We've bought loads for our grandchildren as presents. Really, really like them. Yeah. They're so colourful, and the children would come in, and it looked bright and appealing. And we'd have a nursery where if you didn't want to go into the creche, you didn't have to. You could just go into the changing room and change a nappy and feed your baby in there. Either breastfeed the baby yourself, or you could feed a baby with a bottle or jars of food, whatever you wanted to do. So, yeah, that went on for 4 days. And, of course, we got a donation for that. And we used to do the information booths there. So four districts used to do the creche, one district a day, and the fifth district used to do the information booths. That was Mendip because it was their area. It worked out better that way. They had more information than we did. So yeah, we did that on a regular basis. And then the police had creche facilities, lost children facilities, not creche, lost children facilities after the big in carnivals in Somerset. So they'd have the carnival, but they wanted a lost children facility where they could just go and dump any child they found. And we would usually set up at the police station. And the police would bring in the lost child and leave the child with us and then go off again and look for any more.
And did that check what the amount of events you used to do in the carnivals and shows, did that change over the years?
Yes, it did. It did, yeah.
Did you start doing them less and less and then eventually stop? And did you also get involved in things like the Pilton Pop Festival? And
oh, yes. This is Glastonbury. Yeah. Oh, yes. The first one we got involved with, oh, dear me, my children were quite small then. It was in the early 80s. And the music lovers had gone on, and left behind were, they were termed as hippies, but I don't know what they were. They were travellers of some description, and the police couldn't get them off the site. And in the meantime, I can't think what it was. Not typhoid. What's the other one?
Dysentery.
Thank you. Dysentery broke out on the campsite. So the policemen were coming in after perhaps handling somebody who had dysentery. And they were coming into the feeding point, which was at Pilton, at the school at Pilton. And they weren't, they weren't washing their hands, and then they were going to get in food. And our ladies were getting a bit miffed about this, because they said, those men are going to go down with a bug, and we're going to get the blame because we're the one that's been feeding them. So they said, they rang me on my mobile. I said, are you anywhere near? I said, well, I am, but I'm not, it's not a WRVS, I'm not WRVSing, I'm doing something privately. I've got my three children in the car. Well, could you just call in? Yeah, okay, I'll call in. So I went to the school. I said to the children, look, stay in the car. You've got things to play with. You've got sweets, you've got biscuits, you've got drinks. Stay in the car, keep the doors locked. Mummy won't be very long. And I put them so that they could be actually seen from where I was going to be, and the ladies were waving to them anyway, because the ladies knew them. And I looked up, and my two youngest were missing. So I thought, oh, right. So I legged it out, as you can imagine, and my two youngest had been seen by ladies that they knew and said, will you come and help us, please? And they'd taken them to the front door of this centre, and they'd got them standing there. They obviously, WRVS ladies were with them. And as a policeman came in, if they went towards the cloakrooms, that was fine. The kids didn't speak to them. But if they went in the opposite direction, they were asked to say to these policemen, have you washed your handies? Well, I mean, my children were small. We're talking quite young here. The men loved it. The policemen absolutely adored it. And they were holding their hands out to be seen by the children. And go, and they were pointing to the loos, and the men would trug along there. They absolutely adored it. I couldn't get my kids back in that car fast enough. But because my children were well known to members anyway from other things, that was great fun, they thought. So, yes, we did that. But then after that, the years went on. And one year I was here, and it was torrential rain, absolutely torrential rain. And a call from the emergency planning. Their danger of hypothermia up at the camp. They don't know what to do. They've really got problems up there. Can we help? They needed clothing. Well, the main clothing store was the Taunton one. So I said, well, fine. Richard can drive my car. I'll come with the emergency planner. We'll go and pick up the clothing. And then we're going up there. Richard, follow me, and Jim was the emergency planner, follow us up there. And that would be fine. And one of the kids, my kids joined WRVS as soon as they could, absolutely as soon as they could. So they've been members for a long time. And whichever child it was that was here, she said, all right, she'd come and help as well. Fine, okay. So we went into Taunton and we crammed both cars absolutely full of clothing. And then we drove on up. We got to the site. It was tipping it down. And the police said, oh, yeah, come on, come in through this way. And I said, I was with the emergency planner. And the police took us up this sheer field. It was really steep field grass. The emergency planner went to follow. Richard didn't, he hung back. But the emergency planner went up to follow. Sorry, I use my arms a lot. And about halfway up, we slid all the way back down again. And Richard and Victoria, of course, Victoria went straight on. And they didn't go up that slope. And we went on and we found out what we could do. And it really was a need of towels. We had towels with us, dried them off, and getting them warm and giving them warm drinks. There was plenty of food on the site. They didn't want food. They just needed to be given some hot drinks and some dry clothing, which we did. So, yeah, oh, dear me. And one of the members, dear man, Dennis Edwards, lovely man, he has a photograph of this sea of people. And he would point at somebody in the middle and say, "That's me." How on earth have you thought that? But he knew that was him. Fine, Dennis, you carry on, that's you. So, yeah, and then another time, the police said to me, I'd worked with these policemen for a long time by now, and they said to me, "We've got a legal rave. We think that it would be a good idea if you came on, but don't come on your own, bring somebody with you." "Well, who do you want me to bring? Richard?" "Yeah, bring Richard." I said, "Ah, got Victoria home." "No problem, bring Victoria. Won't be a problem. It's a legal rave, but we just want you to get the idea of what it would be like if it was an illegal rave, and we want you just to come and feed us, because we don't want to ask you to do something, you think it's okay and say yes, and then when your people get there, you find that really you didn't think that you wanted to send them. We'd rather discuss the issues in advance." "Yeah, fair enough." Anyway, we got there and we were the noise. It was horrendous. It was up near the. It was up on the top of the Mendips. The noise was absolutely, totally horrendous. It was so loud, of flashing lights, and we were taken into this police compound, locked into this police compound, and we were standing there talking to them. And we were by a radio, and we could hear these announcements being made. It's how the other half lives, really, isn't it? And Victoria kept taking steps closer and closer to me. And the policeman kept coming in with these holdalls. It was in those holdalls. They kept putting them down and going out with another empty holdall. Naive, weren't we? And the police said, "Don't you know what's in them?" "No, I haven't got any clue." They were absolutely full of drugs, illegal drugs. And Victoria's mouth was getting wider and wider. And wow. And then unfortunately came the tragic news that there had been an accident on site. Somebody had been stabbed. Victoria by this time was actually glued to me with super glue. And we heard the ambulance arrive and went away pretty quickly. And then we heard that tragically the person had died. And so the police were there arresting people. And Victoria said, "I'd love to go to the loo, Mummy." So the policeman said, "Oh, it's not a problem, it's da da da." And she looked at me and she looked at him, she looked across my legs. And I thought, "Yes, I think so." So we left soon after that, because if somebody wants to go to the loo, they want to go to the loo, and that's it, isn't it? So we actually left, but she was like a limpet between me and Richard back to the car. And I thought, if that's her attitude, I can't possibly ask any volunteer to go to any sort of raid. So the police were right. I needed to go along because in my middle-class ignorance, I might have thought, "Yes, okay, you're asking us to do it. I'll see what the members say." But then I could say, "No, absolutely no. There's no way I would ask any of our volunteers to even consider it." So, yeah. But Victoria, when she was at Sixth Form College by this time, she was the only one in the entire college that had been to a rave. Oh, dear me. She didn't tell anybody. She was between her mother and father like a limpet all the time. But it's done that by children the power of good, because not once have any of them wanted to go to the Glastonbury, to the music festival, never wanted to go to a rave. Dr. Harvest has really served my children well. there was another one I was trying to think of. I thought of it partway through that. We were called to, it was the lack of loo thing. We were asked to take part in an exercise. Are you all right for time?
Yes, I'm absolutely fine. Because I've come from over from Devizes. It's not...
Would we take part in an exercise upon... Oh, where would it be? Upon Exmoor somewhere. And there would be army cadets out, supposed to be lost on the moors. And then there would be everybody at search and rescue out looking for them. There were helicopters, there were helicopters in the plural, up there searching for them. On every vantage point, there was somebody with binoculars looking for people. And we got up there and we set up a feeding point and we gave them breakfast and we had hot drinks going all the time because the searchers would come back and they were freezing cold. And we would do that and that was fine. And then one lady said, where are the loos? And the policeman said to me, well, there aren't any. Well, what are we supposed to do? And he said, well, the men are using the hedges. They're going to... Come on, how can women do that? Women aren't going to go and do that. He said, well, can't you sort of make a little group around them? And so that sort of five or six of you stand on the outside and a woman, you know, get real. What woman do you know would do that? So they had a little think about that one and said, oh, well, they said, if you were desperate enough, you'd find somewhere. There's somebody on every vantage point, wherever the woman went, she'd be seen. And it's not like a man who can lean into a hedge, is it? So eventually, Richard arrived and he said, but not a problem. Ferried them. There was a loo a couple of miles away. He then ferried people down to the loos in the car. But I did say at the debrief afterwards, she never thought that we would have needed loos. Well, no, we hadn't, because if we put up portaloos for you, somebody would have washed them out afterwards. But you're not going to get us to do it again unless you provide loos another time, because that will be one of the first questions I ask the next time. And that was that. But that was great. It was a wonderful exercise, I think. Oh, I can't remember what team was there, but I know Richard was there and Anne-Marie was there. My oldest daughter was there. And they kept winding her up. They said, are we going to put you up in a helicopter in a moment to deliver refreshment? Take a pump pot out. And I had to go up to them and say, look, you can't. She's not my age. She doesn't realise that you're joking. Mm-hmm. You can't say that to a teenager and not expect some ructions later. And he just laughed and walked away. And a bit later on, he came up to me and poked me. He said, you, get her. Come my way now. So grabbed her hand and ran over. Where are we going? I had no idea. Off we went. There was the helicopter. And he said, for you. And they pushed her up into the helicopter. They said, and you. And pushed me up as well. You're not escaping. And we went out. They took us out all over the bay and came right. Oh, it was lovely view. And it was wonderful. And, of course, then she could go to college and say to the teenagers there, this is wonderful. You want to join WRV? You'd be surprised what we get up to. And we did actually do some training in the sixth form colleges.
Yeah.
So that was good. That went down well. Yeah. That was good. We've done so many things. Yeah. It's difficult to remember over the years what you've done. And I don't have the reports. If you can remind me of another one.
I've got here doing transport for disabled children. In the late 80s, early 90s.
I wasn't involved with that.
And the Westlands Grand Charity Ball.
That was wonderful. Oh, that was absolutely wonderful. Could we go down? They wanted us in old uniform.
Mm.
And it was... what's he called? Glenn Miller. But obviously it wasn't Glenn Miller, but it was a Glenn Miller type. But it was the ones who'd taken over... the Glenn Miller band and the generations that went on from that. They were there playing. So everybody was dressed up in army uniforms from the war. And the decoration when we got there was all that. But they wanted soup. They wanted a soup kitchen, basically. So we went on down there and we gallons and gallons of soup. But we were all dressed in old uniform as well. That was wonderful fun. The Westlands Helicopter Factory. Yeah. It was the atmosphere, I think, that you got in there and everybody was I don't know, just so enjoying the old music and the old style of dancing. And they really appreciated this soup that we took in.
Yeah, they've got that. You had two cast members from Hello, Hello.
Yes,
well.
They did. It was the two English pilots.
Oh.
They had them in there. Yeah, that was who it was. And they went round and spoke to everybody. And they were in role as they came round and spoke to everybody. And they came up and got their soup and everything. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, dear me, that was a long time ago, wasn't it? But tell you what, though, with the Falklands, this is not an exercise, this was real. For the Falklands, we collected books and magazines to go over. And the army, they said that they would use its packing. So if we could get it down to Yelverton Air Base, instead of using ordinary packing with the stuff, they would shove these magazines and paper, had to be paperbacks, not hardbacks, they would push them in round. Because if the soldiers were in a foxhole and it was muddy and horrible and all of a sudden a fight broke out, they could just ditch that and carry on. Whereas if it was a library book, they would have to return it in pristine condition or get fined. So they were grateful for anything we took down. And we took down quite a lot to Yelverton. At a county meeting when we were discussing it, the county organisers... managers meeting, one of the organisers, district organisers, said that she'd been to pick up some of these magazines and they were totally unsuitable for troops. Absolutely, totally. They were from the top shelf. Totally unsuitable for troops. So she'd refused to take those and she wouldn't pick up any others if they had anything like that in it. She wasn't having her ladies sorting through these things in her office and coming across this sort of book. So I rang up strangely enough, that the people who were giving us these brand new magazines weren't prepared to segregate them. We either had the lot or we didn't have any. They'd find another outlet for them. And she refused to go and collect them anymore. So I rang up the men and the people and I said, look, I'm a different person. I am quite prepared to pick them up and I am quite prepared to take them all because I am sure they are just the ones that the troops want. So it's too late, sorry. In actual fact, it was Richard's cousin that answered the phone. She worked for them. I hadn't realised that. And she said, you're too late. She said, I thought that we would pick them up. She said, but we're too late. They've gone to somebody else now. Which I thought was a great shame.
Yeah.
Quite narrow-minded, actually. Anyway, one trip at Yelverton, while I was unpacking all these things that we had got all packed up for them, they didn't want them in parcels, which is what the ones for the troops went over in normally. They went in small packages down to Norton Manor Camp down here, and they were shipped out in a regular basis. They didn't want them like that. They wanted them in great bundles so they could open the bundles and take out as many as they needed for packing that bit of equipment, and then as many for the next pack of equipment. So I took them on down, and I mean, I had Susanna with me that day. I do have three children, and we were unpacking them all, and that was fine. And I was laughing and joking with one of the people down at Yelverton Air Base, and I said, you'll never guess, and I told him the story. I would think he has dined out in messes all over this country since that. He could not stop laughing the fact that they thought that we'd prefer Reader's Digest to go to them instead of...
Yeah.
Oh, dear me. So, people are different, aren't they?
Yes.
People are so different.
And what emergencies have you attended over the years?
Have I attended? There was... many. I was involved at Boscastle, but I was on the telephone doing all the arranging like that. Angela Curry actually went to Boscastle because I was the manager, but she was at home. I knew she was at home and I needed a rest centre manager down there. If I'd got in my car to drive down there, I would have been out of contact for too long. So I said, would she go and manage till she did? And that was great, absolutely fantastic. So there was Boscastle. And then there was Penhallow, the fire at Penhallow at the hotel there. We had three points on the go there. We were feeding the firemen at the at the hotel as they were trying to put out the fire, we had an survivor reception centre where people who were at the hotel, who were taken out of the hotel, were not injured, could be put, but they were kept from the general public. And then we had an evacuee centre where people from surrounding hotels couldn't get back to their hotels and they were there. Eventually we could shut one of them and we just kept the other two going. So there was that one. Again, I was on the telephone here because it's a long way down to Cornwall from Bishop's Iliad. So I did that. There was a fire at Bradford on Tone. It was a train. It was blocking the crossing, and I think it was a police car was cut off. It was quite a considering that there were not many fatalities. It was not the horrendous thing it could have been if the fire had happened a couple of minutes earlier or later, when they would have been in the centre of Bridgewater or the centre of Taunton. It was in the middle of nowhere, and we got people to go and do that, and there were two points there. Richard was one side. He's very useful, is Richard. Mm-hmm. Richard was one side with cold drinks, and the other side we had people with hot drinks and food, and that worked out very well indeed. So that was the Bradford on Tone fire. Victoria is desperate for me to tell you that we've done so many things with the fire brigade where my kids have come along and called me mum.
Mm-hmm.
That at one watch in the Taunton area actually called me mum. They'll all be gone now. But they called me mum. So whenever I tell, hello mum, what are you doing mum? Thank you very much. I really want somebody my age calling me mum. But yeah. Fire brigade are very keen of their nicknames, aren't they?
Yeah.
Mm. The St Paul's riots, we were feeding at St Agnes Church, I think we were, feeding the police there, and that's not my story, so I don't think I'll tell you. Can you strangle it again?
Yeah.
Mine. It's easier if you do the food in a convoy.
Mm-hmm.
So one was putting the butter on the bread, and the next one was putting the filling in, the next one was cutting up, the next one was bagging it. Made it much easier that way.
Yeah.
And so Pat was slapping the butter on the bread, and the lady next to her was going to put in the filling. It's no good, I've had enough, I can't cut this any longer. I said, what's wrong? She said, you're buttering the bread on the wrong side. What do you mean? I've got the loaf in front of me. I'm going like that. She said, yes. She said, they're not matching when I get them. Well, I can assure you that policemen and firemen don't care which way. In fact, they're not bothered if the bread's buttered. They just want something to eat there and then. Oh, yes, this volunteer was buttering the bread. And I've used that story many, many times in training because it just illuminates the point that there should be flexibility in what you do. Oh dear me. What else have we done? Have you got any more down there that you can remind me?
I haven't.
You haven't? Alright. Oh, the ODA. Do you know about the ODA? Angela knew all about the ODA.
I think so, but you can remind me.
Oh, it was the Overseas Disaster Agency.
Yes. Both Angela and Pat Gill mentioned.
Yeah. There's a lovely photograph in WRVS archive of me and Angela walking down a bank with the Welsh Fusiliers we were.
Mm-hmm.
Walking down this bank after we'd been camping. We were given a poncho each. Everybody, all the volunteers, were given a poncho, and it was up to us to choose how we wanted to sleep that night, but we only had one poncho, and it was November, I think it was, but it was in Wales, in the Highland, up in the north of Wales. Near Tawyn, overlooking there it was. Bottle Widden, that was the name of the place. Oh dear me, a bit remote. And we were given, I I think I bunked down with... Did I bunk down with Angela? I can't think of who I bunked down now with. But, oh, dear, it was a bit... You used one poncho to go underneath you and another one over the top. But if they've been talking about it, I won't bother. Many times have we been to Easingmould.
Yeah.
Because it was considered that was part of your training. You were sent on all these courses to Easingmould. But you left the house, your own house, wearing full uniform. So you had to borrow blouses because nobody had five blouses because sometimes you were away a week. Nobody had that many blouses.
Or was that the red?
It was a check blouse by this time. It was a check blouse. Yeah. Oh, dear me. Yeah. The uniforms weren't cheap. And you had to pay for them yourself.
Yeah.
But certainly in this area, you were expected to wear one wherever you went. And you were not allowed to go to Easingmould unless you had a uniform. And as I said, full uniform. You arrived in uniform and you left in uniform. And you had to wear it all the time you were there. In the evening, you could wear differently.
And Easingmould was part of the Home Office, wasn't it?
Yes, it was the Emergency Planning College in Yorkshire, just north of York. Yeah. So I've been up there to quite a few courses. And they've got a library up there. So one day I finished what I was doing and I went into the library and had a look around. And they've got some WRVS, WVS film there. Have you seen it?
Don't think so.
Would suggest that you try and get hold of it. Because one of them is right back. It was WVS, it had to be. And it was... about a rest centre, I would think in the Bath area, and it is well worth. If the archive hasn't got one, I have a poor copy of it, but I do have a copy of it, and they're welcome to copy my copy, but I want to hang on to it because it's interesting.
Yeah.
And it's when you've been a member of WRVS for so long, it becomes actually part of you.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult then to part with things. But certainly if Archive hasn't got that one, if they approach Easingmould, they might get a better copy than I've got. Otherwise, I'm quite happy to lend mine to be copied, as long as I can have mine back. But yeah, oh dear me. There was an exercise in Devon, and on the south coast of Devon, and it was a boat that had been sunk, and supposedly, and they were rescuing people, and there's this picture of a lovely WRVS volunteer as the people are coming off the boat. Devon had a system of stickers. Before you'd been registered, you had one colour sticker. After you'd been registered, you had another colour sticker. And this lovely volunteer, and she's slapping the stickers on, and we showed her the film and she was horrified. She hadn't realised that she was actually doing it so energetically. So that helped, the fact that she could see it on a film, because then she put them on more gently after that. At least it was only an exercise. Oh, dear me. I'll have another look at my crib sheet again.
Did you have quite a lot of volunteers in emergency services?
Hundreds. Absolutely hundreds of them. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. One team in Froome, which is a town in Mendip, just that one town had a team of 76 volunteers. Just the one one team was 76 volunteers. It was a large team, but that's what it was. Oh yeah, we used to collect the children for the children's holidays. You know about the children's holidays, do you?
Yes.
Yeah.
So would you collect them and take them to...
To the office. They went to the office, and then from the office they went on, usually with someone else, but not always, because it depended where the person was that collected them.
So was it the hostess children's
holidays? Yeah, the hostess children's holidays. So they would be brought into the office, and then who was taking them on would then give them a drink and a biscuit and then take them on to where they were going. And sometimes they had to provide them with clothing before they could go on, because they would just come with a little carrier bag with very little in it. So we would have, if they came into the office, we had access to the clothing store.
Yes.
So they would come in and have clothing. So, yeah, poor things, some of them. One boy, he was sent home quite quickly because the hostess had a pond full of koi carp. And he got up, this little boy got up very early in the morning and was fishing. But he fished all the koi carp out. Oh dear. What can you say? Oh dear me. Yeah, it did. So there were the children's holidays. But one girl didn't want to go there. She wanted to go to a guide camp. She'd been to a guide camp before and thought it would be, so they thought, oh, well, Barbara, brownie guider, bound to know somebody. So fine, Barbara would find, yeah, no problem at all. Local guide company were happy to take her. So I picked her up from the office because then it was everybody knew me and that was fine and I could go on down. And I think one of my kids stayed with her so that she just knew people there and she wasn't there on her own. So yes, yes, I know your mummy. I know your mummy. So that was fine. And then we took her home again. Yeah, dear me. One boy who joined the young team that the training that we did at Richard Hewish College, he wanted to do the emergency services training because he'd been a holiday child. And he so admired what the volunteers had been doing that he wanted to join the emergency team. So he did. That was good. That was good. Yeah. But things change, don't they?
And when you were called to say there was an emergency and WRVS were needed, what then would happen?
Right. You'd be called any time of the day or night. We didn't have a mobile phone, so they would have a list of people they could call. I actually got a mobile phone because Richard didn't like me out in the middle of nowhere without communication. So I did have one, but it was mine. And that was I was the first one in the county office to have a mobile phone. And so, yes, I had my mobile phone. But they would ring. And it could be any time, day or night. You would answer. I always had a phone by the bed. I always had the contact list there. And then you would just start. You'd see if it was the sort of thing that WRVS should be responding to, because they weren't all. And then you would work down where it was and the nearest team. And you would call the nearest team first. You would call the district emergency services organiser to call the local team. That was the original thing. When I joined, women didn't tend to work. They tended to stay home. Things changed in the 80s. And then we found that we weren't getting the people who stayed home with their children were then termed as being yummy mummies, whereas they were never termed as that before. You were termed as being, oh, you work? And it changed from you work to you don't work. And it was just this fine line from where you were a bad mother if you worked to when you were a lazy person if you didn't. Not easy, is it, that very fine line. But so when we found it was less easy to get volunteers, perhaps we would contact the team leader direct, because some people just didn't have the time to take on the responsibility of being a district emergency services organiser. So the team member would then call their team. And if they got somebody, they would then ring back to say, right, I've got a team, it's so-and-so, 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 so-and-so. And they're off. They've got all their equipment, they're all up and running, they've got the food from wherever, or they're going to get the food from wherever, and off they go. And then they would keep an eye on them, they would make sure, they would get the police or whoever called them to ring through to make sure that everything was all right, or whether it was going to be long duration, and they would need another team going in. We have lost members where you have turned up for an emergency to find that the team that's there is just going home because the emergency's over. People don't like getting out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning if that's happening. They don't mind if it's an emergency, but they do mind if it's a fool's errand. Mm. So you had to make sure that the team was actually required before you sent a relief team. We sent them every 4 hours, or always aimed for 4 hours. Sometimes it ended up as five, because it could finish within 5 hours. So what's the point of sending somebody for that last windy up bit? So it might be 5 hours, but they would go. But they had to keep in contact with whoever called them out. And we needed to know that they'd gone, so that we knew that they were there. If they didn't arrive, we knew we needed to send police to look for them because something had gone wrong. So that's the way that we played it. And then we would send them every 4 hours until we were told the emergency was over. But it's we were under one exercise that we were on. It was supposed to be in a motorway incident, and car had fallen off the bridge onto the road below and all of a sudden, and it was tipping it down, and the only place that we could actually get any shelter was standing under the bridge. Otherwise, and it was pitch black, and the fire brigade said, we can't let you have a light, because they usually let us have a light. We can't let you have a light. We actually need the light. We can't let you have it. Well, how are we going to know if we've got enough stuff in the cups? So you had to put the coffee on the spoon and level it off with your finger, and then put it in, and you had to put your thumb in the cup, just the top of your thumb in the cup, so that when the liquid came up to your thumb, you knew you'd actually done it. And that was the only way you could do it. So you had to keep your hands clean, because you couldn't stick your finger in the cup. Mind you, they were not bothered. They just wanted the drinks. They would have put up with your thumb in the cup anyway. Yeah. But it's the only way you could do it. Tea bags were a good invention. But the insulator containers we had thermoturins, which you don't put on the gas, although somebody did once and it blew up. That is not a good idea. They are like a big thermos flask, and you heated them up with boiling water. You didn't have to fill them up. You just had to put a kettle full of boiling water into them, put the lid on, and let them get hot while you boiled up all the water for the thing itself. Then you tip that away. The container inside, you'd put the tea in it, and because we knew exactly how many tea bags made up that particular thermoturn, put the water in, stand it for as long as you had to, shush it a bit, give it another minute, then throw the tea bags away, otherwise it's stewed. And that would stay reasonable for 4 hours. So you had plenty of time actually to make it in the office or at home and take it to the event and feed the firemen with it, police, whoever it was that called you.
Mm. And how did you feel when you went out on an emergency?
Trepidation, what you were going to find. The adrenaline kicked in, so you were on a high, but you never knew what you were going to find when you got there, so there was a little bit of not angst, I suppose, but a little bit of trepidation there. But you were on a high because it was the adrenaline was pumping through. Even at 3 o'clock in the morning, it still was like that. It was surprising. Some volunteers, you had to almost put their arm up their back to make them go home because they didn't want to leave. And it was important for them to go home.
Yeah.
Because then you could call them the next day if you needed them. You couldn't do that if they hadn't been home to sleep.
Did you find that WRVS changed over the years while you were a volunteer? And how did it change?
The volunteers were volunteers. Some county staff were paid. The emergency services wasn't paid in Somerset. In fact, the emergency services wasn't paid in the South West, although it was paid in most of the rest of the country. Why though that anomaly? We were told that the area office had decided that the division office had decided that they couldn't afford to pay the emergency services people on their budget. Whatever. I went into it as a volunteer. I expected to be a volunteer. The grants that they got weren't really worth kicking and fussing about. It was £1,000. It worked out roughly at, if you worked one day a week, you got paid £1,000 a year for the staff that were paid, which wasn't exactly going to break the bank if you didn't get it. But then they decided that Deputy County Organiser and then Deputy Area Manager. When I was Deputy Area Manager, I was paid my £1,000 a year. But I didn't work one day. I worked virtually every day anyway. I had the time and I enjoyed doing it. But we did know that if one of the kids was ill, I was home with the kids. It was never a consideration. And school holidays, it was a question of my mother would play with the kids, have the kids, and I would go and do what I was going to do. But it was never, oh dear me, I need to find childcare, because I didn't need to find childcare because I didn't work. I was a volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked doing it. Yeah, we thought it was our little contribution to the fund, whichever way you around you want to look at it. Yeah. I didn't like the nuclear bit. This 1 in 5, I didn't that at all. Really
did
didn't
you
like
have
that.
To do the training for that?
Yes, I did.
And did you have to deliver it as well?
Yes, I did. Didn't like it.
No.
Didn't like that at all. I didn't feel that I was knowledgeable enough to actually deliver the training. And they actually stopped it soon after I was doing it. I really didn't want to do it, and I was backing out of it left, right and centre. One of the county organisers in Somerset actually had a rough ride. She went along to some village and did it to a village group, where I don't know who it was in the village, but parishioners, and they gave her a really rough ride. And she came back and said, right, I don't think that we should be doing this. I would challenge whether we ought to be doing it to our own volunteers. Certainly we're not doing it to anybody outside again. And I thought, well, that suits me, because I didn't want to do it to anybody outside in the first place. But I had done it to some of the volunteers. But we decided then that we wouldn't do it.
Did you think it was useful, the training for the 1 in 5?
I ran it by my father once, who was in the artillery during the war. When he stopped laughing, he said, well, no, not really, unless it actually just made people feel a little more confident in themselves and stopped them panicking. They thought they could do something. He said, but putting a door against a wall is really not going to stop a nuclear blast or nuclear fallout. So, and he really cheered me up by saying, oh, well, if they dropped a bomb, any sort of bomb down in the village, they'd take all the front of your house out because it sticks out proud of the building. Yeah, well, thanks, Dad, I really wanted to know that.
Yeah, because it was all whitewashing walls and
wash your windows and dip your curtains in. I can't even remember what you had to dip your curtains in, and hang your curtains up like that. And that window you would fill up with books so that it couldn't get in through the books. And you think, right, of course not. I had enough books. Books I'm not short of.
Mm-hmm.
And I have read most of them, but I really couldn't see that was going to stop much nuclear fallout coming in. And they said, oh, you had to stay in under this door for 14 days. Three kids, yeah, right.
And did they stop giving the talks around the late 80s?
Yes, very much so. I think we'd done it before that. I think we'd stopped just before that.
Yeah.
Because because
they've been going since 1955.
Yes, the Lady Reading wanted 1 in 5 people. Yeah. Which is why they were called 1 in 5. Basic aids to home defence, I think they were then called.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear me, no. I had one instructor when I was being trained who took it to the next level. She asked me, the training was in here, and she asked me for a bucket of water. Right, so I went and got a bucket of water and a cloth. And put it on the floor there. And she had... Oh, she wears an electric socket there. And she had a light bulb on a flex. A proper light socket on a flex with a bulb in it. Into a... whatever it was. It was just bare wire. That was it, bare wire. And the other one was a plug and bare wire. So... she said, now, I don't want any of you to try this at home. And I thought, well, I'm not going to bring a bucket of water in on my carpet on my own. So, you know, hey, let's think about it. She then put on really thick, heavy rubber gloves. And she put the two ends of flex, bare ends of flex, one from the socket and one from the light bulb, into the water and switched on the electric. The bulb lit up, which, of course, we knew it would. And she then switched it off and said, I don't want any of you to be frightened. The water's not electrified, but I just wanted to show you the current. And I thought, well, if she'd been in a lab at school demonstrating to school kids, wonderful. My sitting room carpet? Not so happy about that. But no, we didn't do things like that. We really didn't do things like that. And then by the time I was a trainer instructor and an HQI, I was, it wasn't very long before we very rarely did it in people's homes. It tended to be in halls.
Yeah. And was it more paperwork based then, and sort of how to run a rest centre?
There was a lot of that, but we would involve the emergency planners more and get a fireman perhaps to come along and do the fire talk, things like that. And really didn't want to be doing that. It looked too amateurish to be doing it in people's houses. Plus the fact, did people really want you doing it in their houses? And houses began to get smaller. How many people can you get in most houses?
And did you stop training with how to use the soil boilers and the trench cooker and things like that?
We had to learn the different types of soya boiler because there are different types, and we had to learn which those feet mean they're this sort. Who was going to test you on that? WRVS. I got tested on that at my HQI exam. So yeah, and how many bricks that you need to do a trench cooker, and how many bricks you need to do a 72, by the way, and how many for a cross trench cooker and a trench cooker. The cross trench cooker is 72. And where you had to put the half brick, and some people even had bricks, and you had to go and do it in the garden. And when I qualified as an instructor, I was given a set of wooden bricks, so I could build one on a table and show people. And we did use trench cookers, but not that often, and not. Once, I don't know, things changed. They changed so fast, and that was the difference.
Yeah.
Things suddenly grew up and became the next generation, where people said, well, hang on a minute, you can get a pizza, you can get fish and chips. Do we really need to be doing this? Do we need to be making a stew in a soya boiler? Who wants to be lugging around that soya boiler in their own car? So, and then, when the offices closed, who was going to store a soya boiler? It made a big difference when the offices closed. But having said that, the ones that they kept really were modern. They were not. Some of the offices I've been in were a little bit rough and ready and gloomy.
Yeah.
Whereas they changed from that to being modern and swish and. And you could order stationery, which we weren't allowed to do that.
Did this come in?
Sounds ridiculous, doesn't it?
Did this come up in after when they appointed a chief executive in 1992? All these changes.
Oh, would that be when it would be? It could be.
So no, that's when they started closing the offices, was the 1990s.
Yeah. But they're opening them again now, aren't they? So
yes.
Yeah. Not all the changes were for... to have no office in Somerset was looked on as a very retrograde step by all the volunteers in Somerset. And we weren't the only ones that ended up with no office at all. And if you've not got a focal point of some description, you lose volunteers. They go to people who have got focal points. And we lost our focal point, and that was a massive, massive shame. Really was a massive shame.
And that was the one in Taunton that you lost?
We lost them all. We lost them all in Somerset. We didn't have an office because we had one in Yeovil, which was a modern office, rented, but a modern office. So there was nothing detrimental about that. There was one in Frome, which was a little bit seedy. So, hey, yeah, I can understand that. There was one in Shepton Mallet, which was the Mendip district office, and that was a house, and that was owned by WRVS, but it was a house which they tried to make into an office, and I don't think that they convert too well. Then Bridgewater was another house that had been converted into an office, and again that didn't really convert too well. I think they got to the point that they were getting dilapidated. Nobody was actually putting in the money to repair these places. They were fine when they were new, when they were first taken over and kitted out. But then nothing was replaced because the budgets weren't there. We didn't have the funding to actually do it. And so they just went downhill, downhill and downhill. Where else did we have an office? In Minehead we had one. That one was all right. That one closed as well. And then the Taunton one, which again was a house, but had been converted to offices quite... Put it this way, it's still being used as offices in Taunton now by another organisation, so it's still being used for that function. That converted quite well, and it had its own parking at the back. So that was all right, but that closed as well. And then all the ones in Avon closed, so Avon and Somerset didn't have anything. So you have absolutely no focal point. Mm. What can you do if you've no focal point? How do you keep in touch with volunteers? I think the meals people had offices after all the general offices had closed, but they were quite snippy about you sharing. They didn't like you going in there. They certainly did not want you to use their photocopier or anything like that. But very, very snippy at times. So they changed the locks on the door. So even if we had a key, which he'd asked for all the keys back, even if we had kept one, they wouldn't have been any good because he changed the lock on the door. He changed the burglar alarm number. So even if we had managed to get through that, we couldn't have got in through the burglar alarm. And I thought that was silly because we were all WRVS. And the only managers in Somerset who lived in Somerset who might have wanted to go on there was me for emergency services and Jill Gould, who was community services. Yeah. We actually lived in Somerset. But no, he had no intentions of us going anywhere near his office. It suited me. I converted one bedroom into an office, and I still use it as an office now. So it suited me. I was up there. I could work away to my heart's content. So, and I had stuff of my own anyway. So,
and did you find the number of volunteers getting involved in emergency services got less?
It got less and less and less because there weren't any district organisers. There was no focal point in Somerset to push it. Why would they bother volunteering? And then when you did come, oh dear, I've joined somebody else now. I'm volunteering for this organisation or that organisation. Or I've joined the Red Cross. A lot of them went across to Red Cross because Red Cross still had their offices. They still had their focal points. They still did things. Whereas I covered when I was employed as the emergency services manager for Western Counties. Western Counties was Dorset, Somerset and Avon. I was employed for 2.5 days. That's enough work for anybody with the number of volunteers we had. Keeping in contact with them, keeping in contact with all those emergency service units. Dorset, not only was Dorset County, but they had 2 unitaries. So you had to keep in contact with the 2 unitaries, so that made 3. Somerset, 1 lot, that was okay. At Avon was 4 unitaries. So you had to keep in contact with all those. Then I got everything changed and it was decided that I'll go back a step if you don't mind. Sorry, yes, I'm messing up your recording. I was a volunteer for emergency services and we were told that they were going to employ somebody to do my job, but it would be for more counties. And I thought, I'm going to end up training somebody to do my job, to then be in charge of me. So I thought, no, I'm going to apply. So I applied and I got the Avon, Somerset and Dorset.
Yeah.
Angela got Devon and Cornwall. There was a big debate who was going to have Dorset, whether it would be Angela or me. I got it. So that was the big debate between. But we were very friendly anyway, so it didn't make any odds. Because they all laughed, because Andrew and I went to the interviews together in the same car. It made sense. She was passing, virtually, to go to Milton Hill. Mm. We might just as well go together. I don't know whether she picked me up from the house or I met her on the motorway. But we might just as well go in one car and save the fuel, might we?
Yeah.
And they all laughed when we turned up for similar jobs in the same car. And they said, well, what if you don't go? Tough. We've known each other years long enough. We're not going to fall out over that. I didn't want somebody who didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, coming in. And
coming in and being stroppy and funny. And I had to tell them what... And they didn't want... And, oh, dear, no, I didn't want that. So I thought, if I applied for the job and I didn't get it and they put someone in, then it wasn't my fault if they couldn't do it or it was wrong. So that was my theory anyway.
Yeah.
So I applied and I got the job for that, and that was great. And then they decided they were going to have another revamp, and the area would be Devon, Cornwall, Somerset, Dorset, Avon, Gloucester. Not Wiltshire, Gloucester. And Angela and I talked all the time, as you can imagine. Angela was going to be a senior, and I was going to apply for that. Got it, that was it, end of conversation. Or is it, I can't remember quite how it worked out, but that's what it was. She was a senior emergency services manager, so she looked after the managers in the south, and I was the emergency services manager, and that was full time and a half, because to go down to Cornwall is no short journey.
Yeah.
And neither is it to go over to Swindon. If you've got to be there for a meeting at 10 o'clock, you're leaving early.
You are.
And Bournemouth, Poole, it's big distances, isn't it?
It is.
So you soon found out that you had your work cut out to do it. But that's how come I was employed as the emergency services one.
Mm-hmm.
And I, when they were doing the last division where it wasn't going to be emergency services anymore and you had to be whatever the title is now.
Resilience and recovery.
No, they changed it. They were going to have, instead of having emergency services separate, they were going to amalgamate it and call it something else. I can't think what they were going to...
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't see how that... So Jill Gould, who was the community services person, me and Elizabeth... Oh, I can see her face, can't think of her name. We were going to be made redundant, but we could apply for this new job. And I thought, I don't want to do it. I just don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't interested in the other branches anyway. I wasn't interested in the hospital projects, which you'd have to cover the hospital projects. So I thought, I'll blow this for a chuckle. So I asked for voluntary redundancy, which I got. And I carried on doing emergency services in Avon and Somerset. And I've been sitting on the regional resilience forum.
Yeah.
I represented all the voluntary agencies in the southwest of England on that. And that was the army, the police, emergency planning, you name it, they were on it. And then when they were disbanded, just before that, I stopped doing that. But up to Christmas, I was the voluntary agency rep for Avon and Somerset to the local resilience forum, which again is the same group of people, ambulance, fire brigade, etc. And so I carried on doing that and doing call outs and things like that. And since Christmas, my walking, I don't know whether you actually know, my walking is not very good, the chair's built up. I have a wheelchair when I'm out. I can't actually walk very far at all. Creaky over there. And so I decided it was time for me to step down. Plus the fact I could sense a wind of change.
Yeah.
I can put my hand on the phone, we have a phone here, I could put my hand on the phone and the kids would say, well, who's it going to be, Mummy? Oh, it's going to be Auntie Hazel, and the phone would ring and it would be my sister. And I could sense this wind of change coming in.
And was this before 2013? Really?
This is Christmas, this Christmas.
Christmas.
Yeah. And I could sense this wind of change, so I thought, no, I'm getting out. So I resigned. Mm. I resigned from that, I resigned from the local resilience forum, I resigned from the Somerset voluntary agency group and from the Avon voluntary agency group, which I was attending all those meetings. There were a lot of meetings in a month with that lot, and I now just edit a little magazine, compile and edit a little magazine for Sharon Donkin, which is North Somerset, and it's just, we want volunteers for this, and have you got time to do that, and we've collected, so it's just for her little bit.
Yeah.
And any photographs of things that they've been doing with the permission of the people who've been in it, obviously, but
And do you still keep in touch with what, well, Royal Voluntary Services?
Well, yes, I'm still doing that. Yeah. Sharon Donkin is the manager for North Somerset.
Yeah.
So she has an office up there.
Mm-hmm.
And she runs the little community, I'm sure they're big community, but she runs the community projects there. The big telephone befriending scheme and the clubs and things like that.
I do know Sharon, actually, I know
who Sharon is. So we had a chat about it to see what role I could do.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to her, I used to do it when I was the emergency services manager, I would send out weekly updates of what was happening, and then every now and again, perhaps a bigger one, but just to make sure that the volunteers that were on email, because I could only do it on email, not the stamp, but the volunteers that were on email at least knew what we were doing.
Yeah.
We'd been out last night doing such and such, and so many volunteers were involved. I'm doing the same for Sharon now.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm coughing a little drunk. Okay. Did you have some Coke?
Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to mention?
I will pick up my little piece of paper again. Let's see what I've got on my... We talked about the ODA. Yeah. Turned up in uniform, the kibbled barley. Oh, I've been to Buckingham Palace at a garden party.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to go in uniform because I was nominated by the sheriff. Is it the sheriff who nominated me? Lady Gass, anyway. She put me forward, so it was me and Richard. Richard could come as well. So Angela was there in uniform, as was Anne Pierce. So they were both there in uniform. So there were four WRVS there that day, even though two of us hadn't been put forward by WRVS. So that was great.
And did you meet the Queen when you were there?
I had met the Queen, but not there. There was the garden party at Milton Hill. Yeah. She's so beautiful, isn't she? And then the Queen Mother, we were privileged to go to the unveiling of the memorial for the firefighters who lost their lives during the war, Second World War. So there was a big service in St Paul's Cathedral. Mm. So went up to that. That was great. with the ODA. Sorry, I really flipped out and back again. We went up with the Welsh Fusiliers and we were doing things with them. And I wasn't all that happy with map reading, although I used to teach it for WRVS. I thought, if I'm stuffed in the middle of nowhere and I've got a map read, I'm really not going to be very happy with the map reading. And I don't think that the Welsh Fusilier that showed me how to do it had got his map the right way around, because I was sure he was doing it in the wrong direction, and I was right and he was wrong, and that was worrying. And so afterwards I approached 40th Commando down here and said, look, would they mind awfully? Yeah, no problem at all. So they let me have a little marine who wasn't that little in actual fact. And he spent a day going through map reading with me. And he said, what I'd really like to do, he said, is to get you to yomp over the hills. I've never yomped in my life. Have you ever yomped?
No.
Get you to yomp over the hills. No, I don't think so. So, yeah, that was that one. We used to do virtually all the local agricultural shows with either Lost Children Facility or creches, depending on which they wanted. Talked about the fireworks. I wrote the creche training programme.
Okay.
Because we did so many, Elizabeth Haler was the lady I couldn't think of. I spoke to her about things. And I researched it with our volunteers, because our volunteers did it on such a... I called them together to a meeting and I asked them how they did it, and I wanted to know exactly. And you can imagine they were very helpful. And then I went to emergency planning and said, look, this is what I'm trying to do. And they said, right, let's have a meeting, but let's get the police involved. Fine, no problem. And they had a social worker there as well, and we were all involved and we hammered it all out. And then I went away and I wrote a package, which I then went back to the police and... they were happy with that. Then I went back to our volunteers and I said to them, right, I'm going to do a training program as if you've never done a creche facility. And you've got to listen to me as if you've never done it before. Then afterwards, I want you to pick it apart constructively so that we can rewrite any bit that needs rewriting. Because if it's not going to work, there's no point in going any further with it. Because if it's right, that's what we're going to use in future to train people to do the creche. Oh, yes, and they took it all in very carefully. And I did it, and they all listened. And one or two little suggestions, but not much. And I incorporated them in it. We went back to the police and the fire brigade, everybody else. Said, oh, yes, that was fine. And then it was put forward as the creche programme, the training programme. Yeah, I enjoyed writing. I liked writing things like that. Yeah. And just before emergency services finished, before I sort of left like that, before the emergency services managers finished, I should say, we were divided into groups and asked to rewrite all our, update basically, all our training packages so that the changes were going to happen. We knew the changes were going to happen so that anybody who took over would be able to up and run with what we'd got. So, fine, okay then. And it was Glynis Williamson and I were given the foundation course, so we really went to town on that and thoroughly enjoyed it. And that was, and other people did other parts of the package. So, yeah, we did that. I think then once I resigned, once I'd taken voluntary redundancy, however you want to phrase it, I don't think it was ever used again. I don't think anybody did any training after that. Certainly I never did any.
No, I think training has got less and less.
Yeah.
Over the years,
something had to go. You couldn't expect these poor people to fit everything into their schedule. It wouldn't have worked. And well, now basically in Somerset, the county hall, the emergency planners in county hall, have been told don't include us in your plans. Cross us off your plans. Mm-hmm. And if you want us, contact us and we'll see if we can. But please don't involve us in any of your plans. Yeah. So,
because now we've moved away from emergency services.
Yeah. It was bound to happen. I could see it happening. Yeah. And I thought, all right, that's the thing. But I was so pleased that the police contacted me afterwards. The emergency planners took me out for a meal. But the police contacted me afterwards and said, oh, Barbara, there's one more meeting we want you to come to. Would you come to it? We want you at this time, at this local. Yeah, fine. When I got there, they presented me with the biggest bouquet I have ever seen in my life. It was massive. And a Bristol Blue bowl out there. And it's inscribed, which I thought was really lovely of them. That was kind. And just before Christmas, we were involved with the Somerset Level floods. Last year, we were involved with the Somerset Level floods. And as part of that, we were awarded a certificate. Mm. And an award from the Emergency Planning Society, so that was quite nice. The bowl I think is lovely. It's got my name on it. No, it's not got my name on it. That's not true. It's not got my name on it. It's got everything else on it. Yeah, I was quite pleased with that. I thought it was nice to be appreciated like that. Mm.
And what was the biggest change to WRVS and emergency services since you joined?
Getting rid of the Sawyer boilers. I enjoyed that round with us everywhere. It took up so much space. It was all right while there was a car in each district. But once they got rid of those cars, some of the volunteers were quite put out. District organisers, they weren't volunteers, were quite put out when their cars were taken away from them. One only did. She did less than 20 miles a month. And she couldn't understand why she couldn't have a car. Because she needed one. No, not for that mileage you don't. Get a taxi, it would be cheaper. I think that is the updating of the emergency equipment from emergency services, the updating of the equipment. It became more professional. And I think we were looked on as a more professional organisation then. The volunteers have always been wonderful.
Yeah.
Been a pleasure working with them.
It's just become more, as it's got staff and employees, it's just become more, a lot of people have said it's become more business-like.
It's become more business-like, yeah. Yeah, it has become more business-like. But that's losing contact with the grassroots, is losing contact with the volunteers who...
And where do you think raw voluntary services place in society is today?
Do you really want me to say? Not with old people. Mm. Not with old people. There are too many other organisations filling that role. Really are. The home from hospital, that's all taken care of in our area. That's not a needed service. It's the wrong role. They've gone down the wrong role. I'm not saying emergency services was the right one. I've got enough sense to realise the writing was on the wall for that. But I don't think going down the line of old people is either.
And what do you think is the future?
Can I just say one more thing about old people? The majority of the volunteers that I know are old people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're asking old people to look after old people. I think, what? Sorry, the future.
The future for Royal Voluntary Service.
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know what niche you could look at. I can understand why you didn't want to deal with children anymore. I understand that. There were so many pitfalls suddenly coming to the fore. We had tried to cover ourselves wherever possible with two people, took a child. You didn't help the child to the loo, but two people went to the loo with the child and two people came out of the loo with the child. That you didn't do anything with the clothing. It, all understandable. But I don't know. I really don't know. The hospital projects. Are we going to lose out to people like Costa Coffee?
We are. I don't know whether, you know, but the Bristol Royal Infirmary, we used to have a shop there. That's now gone, and it's a Costa Coffee and North Staffordshire Hospital is now a Costa Coffee. So there are places where we are losing out.
The hospital in Taunton here, they did approach WRVS many years ago as to whether we would do a coffee shop for them. And the person they approached was a little short-sighted, to put it mildly, because they said, no, we don't do that sort of thing. Instead of going back and actually asking and seeing, could we do it, they said no, which was... They picked on the wrong person. I think if they'd actually spoken to any other member of staff, they would have said, oh, find out about that and come back to you. So we are not in the Taunton Hospital. But where it used to be League of Friends, and that was all it was, League of Friends everywhere, we started to have to go in quite a lot with Richard. And all of a sudden we're finding this Marks and Spencer's with seating area and their sandwich takeaway area. Well, I think I quite would like to go to Marks and Spencer's if I had to choose. There is this cafe downstairs, but I still would rather go to the Marks and Spencer's because I know the standard of the food. So I'm wondering whether if Marks get in like that, in the Taunton Hospital, are they going to start looking for outlets? And if Marks get in, would the next one be Waitrose, which is what they do on the motorway? Alternate ones, virtually, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I would wonder if it's the writing on the wall for those. I don't know. I really don't know. I would be very interested to hear, because people would like you to do things, but they don't want to have to pay a bill at the end of it. That's the problem. Because some organisations think that voluntary agency means you don't charge, and they're quite surprised when they actually find there's a bill attached to it.
Yeah.
We used to have to pay. Well, the first thing we did when we called out... I'm sorry.
It's all right.
The first thing that we had to do when we were called out, the first question virtually on the page was, who's going to pay?
Mm-hmm.
And then we stopped. That sentence got taken off, but that for years and years, the first question was, who's going to pay?
Mm-hmm.
And then we were told who would pay. And we wrote it down, and then we carried on with the rest of the form. Because if it was, oh, well, we're not, well, we'll ring somebody else then. Or tell someone who is going to pay to give us a call.
So is it usually the county council who'd pay for?
Whoever called us would be the ones that would pay. We would slam the bill into whoever called us. So The edict came out. Oh, I don't know who was in charge. I don't know who the chief exec was, but an edict came down from him to say that stop asking that. We'd worry about the bill afterwards. But it was always whoever called us were the ones that would get the bill, because we wouldn't take the police word that the fire brigade would pay, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Had to be the person who was actually paying.
Mm. Oh yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So I can't think of a role for WRVS. I can't, and that's tragic. But I can understand why they've gone down the older people, but it's older people. I don't know how many young volunteers they've got.
It's very few, I think.
It's all my age and upwards. Which, we don't really want to deal with crumblies. We are crumblies. That was very un-PC of me, wasn't it? Well, at least I admit I'm a crumbly.
It's been said before, though.
Yeah. Yeah, so you get frequent looks of disgust from my sister-in-law when I call us crumblies. We are! But, I don't know. I really don't know. I think that we've had so much fun with emergency services, it's difficult to think of anything else. We went to one exercise. I've written it down on this bit of paper. We went to one exercise, and this guy came out, and he was an evacuee, and he's pretending that he was a Muslim, couldn't speak English. Well, Ruth Weaver and I looked at each other and laughed, and we both started talking Arabic. And he was completely floored because he couldn't. We could, he couldn't. And then at another exercise, someone was pretending to be French. And and she started, because French is her first language. So we could usually produce somebody. Somewhere along the line, we got one who spoke Flemish, another who spoke Italian. Quite handy, really, isn't it?
Very.
Oh, yeah. He was quite floored with that. At another exercise, it got to the point that I would go to all the exercises, but I wouldn't take part. So the emergency planners say, you're going to be a victim. Yeah, fair enough. Or they put me on the panel, and I didn't like being on the panel, going around supervising. I didn't like doing that. I'd rather get in there and sort it out. So they used to try and make me a victim. One, I was supposed to be pregnant, thank you very much. At another, I was supposed to have just been raped. And I was like this with men and withdrawn. And they took me through to one area and said, and they stayed with me, and they got this. I assume that she was victim support or something to talk to me. And I must be something of a drama queen, because after a while, she got hold of my hand. She said, stop, I need to know. Is this real? No. At the next exercise, as I walked in the door, she said, it's her. If she does it, it's not real. Thank you very much. But that one, I think I was one of the people walking around. So yeah, I have played quite a few funny roles at exercises. Dear, dear, dear. We had one where Richard was doing the teas. And we had him, you've seen Richard's hair, it's tight curls. We had him in a hairnet. He's ever so good-tempered, he's very, very pliable. We had him in the, good job was this, he got three daughters, and it had him in this hairnet, and we had him in, he got on a tabard, but he got on an apron on top of it because it was food and he didn't want it to be on his tabard. And his hands were all scrubbed and he got this disinfectant there. And he was just standing there, pushing the biscuits and saying, help yourself to tea. And the report that went back to the emergency panel, they said, you've got to read this. Because I think they had a photo of Richard all dolled up like this. Look at the complaint. Talk about nitty-picky. Somebody, the environmental health officer had gone around and said, Richard wasn't wearing gloves.
So the hairnet and everything.
The hairnet and the disinfectant gel. He wasn't wearing gloves. And actually, I did challenge that because gloves I'm not the be-all and end-all.
No.
And another environmental health officer agreed with me, because you put on the gloves and you don't bother washing your hands because your hands are clean.
Yeah.
But you've got the same gloves on, but you don't wash your hands because your hands are clean. Whereas if you just got your hands, you wash your hands frequently, you put the gel on. Oh, yeah. Poor Richard. He fell over on the first thing he ever did with WRVS. It was a bonfire party, a firework party down at the school, the back of the school. And we were doing hot dogs and whatever it was. And of course, always when it's the food, you're the last ones to leave. Everybody else has sloped off. And the caretaker, Richard was walking out with the last load, the caretaker switched off the outside lights. Richard went flying over some logs that they'd got down, placed beautifully as stools for the kids to sit on. And he came home, he said, "Oh, my arm hurts. Oh, my arm really hurts." I thought, "Do you want to go to hospital?" "No, no, no, it'll be all right." Anyway, the next morning his arm still hurt, so I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, come on, we're going." Took him to hospital. He'd actually chipped a bone above his elbow. It wasn't even that, it was... And he was in a terrible state, and it had to be all plastered up, and he could go into work, but he couldn't write. They had to give him an apprentice to do the writing for pre-computers. If there'd been a computer, he could have done it with one finger. They had to give him an apprentice off the shop floor to actually do the writing for him. And that was what I think about that time he decided he should join WRVS, because he wasn't a member, because members are insured. He wouldn't have needed the payout, but he would have got a payout. But he thought, well, perhaps he should be insured, because you don't know what you're going to do another time, do you? Oh, dear me, poor Richard. Dear, dear, dear. We have had fun. Mm-hmm. The whole family has had fun over the years. There are so many things that when we get together, we still giggle over them. But things change. Mm-hmm. We do appreciate that things change. It's just sad that our grandchildren aren't going to get to have the fun that we had. Still, never mind. No, I can't really think. My brain was working at the same time as that waffle, trying to think what I could suggest, but I really, really can't.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me today, Barbara, and this will make a great contribution to our Voices of Volunteering project.
Sarah, I do apologise.